Well, come with me to the reading which we had, Matthew chapter 13, and we're looking at the parable of the weeds. It's probably better known as the parable of the wheat and the tares. As we said before, we were in Matthew 13 last time, and perhaps if you remember, Matthew is writing to Jews, and his theme is the kingdom of heaven. It's mentioned 12 times in chapter 13. What's the kingdom of heaven? The kingdom of heaven is where God reigns. And what were the Jews waiting for? Well, they were waiting for God's reign to break in to this broken, dying world. They were waiting for the kingdom of heaven to come, for God's will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. How did they expect the kingdom to come? Well, they thought that God's intervention, as they looked at that kaleidoscope of images in the Old Testament, that God's intervention would be sudden and dramatic and cosmic. It would be on a grand, glorious scale. It would be unmissable. So be out with the old age of suffering and sin and death, and to be in with a new age of joy and life and peace, and best of all, God himself with us. So they believed that the kingdom of heaven would come with the passing, with the end of the old age. It'd be the end of the old and the beginning of the new. But of course, that's not how the kingdom comes. This new age of God's rule begins before the old age has passed. For a time, the two ages overlap. We're still living in the overlap. So God's kingdom has come, is coming, and will come. We continue to pray, your kingdom come. Because the kingdom has been inaugurated. It's already begun, it's already here, it's growing, it's advancing, but it's not yet being consummated. It's not yet come in all its fullness. Sometimes people talk about the already, but not yet. And that whole idea to the Jewish mind, with hundreds of years of conditioning, that whole idea was shocking. So seven parables to resolve this tension. In fact, you find the whole of Matthew's gospel, he's resolving this tension. But here's seven parables to resolve this tension between what they expect to happen and what actually is happening. So to the parable, let's remind ourselves. Verse 24, chapter 13, he put another parable before them, saying, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field, but while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. Apparently that wasn't an unusual occurrence. And the weeds here are probably darnel. It looks like wheat, but if you eat what it produces, it'll make you very sick, may even kill you. It's poisonous. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also. And the servants of the master of the house came and said to him, Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have weeds? He said to them, an enemy has done this. So the servant said to him, then do you want us to go and gather them? But he said, no, lest in gathering the weeds, you root up the wheat along with them. Apparently, darnel has very deep roots, probably deeper than the wheat. So if you try and uproot the weeds, you're going to uproot the wheat with them. So they must coexist side by side until the harvest. Let them grow together until the harvest. At harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first, bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn. So here are two crops. There's wheat, there are weeds, they're growing side by side. One by nature is good, one by nature is bad, but they'll grow side by side until the harvest. And only at the harvest will they be separated. But that separation will be dramatic. Gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn. So what does it mean? Well, Jesus explains the meaning to his disciples. And if you remember, just going to read verse 36 to 43, there are lots of echoes here from Daniel. Daniel and the kingdom of God, they throw light on each other. Then he left the crowds and went into the house, verse 36, and his disciples came to him saying, explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field. He explained, he answered, the one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. That's a reference to Daniel, the king, the one who receives the kingdom. The field is the world, and the good seed is the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear. So Jesus is the one who sows the good seed. He's the Son of Man. He's the King. He's the one to whom the kingdom belongs. And the field into which the seed is sown is the world. And the good seed, well, they're the sons of the kingdom. They're believers. They're those who love and serve the King. And the weeds, they're the sons of the evil one. And the evil one is the devil. He's the enemy. And so at the end of this age, the age that is passing, this present world, the angels will be sent out to gather two harvests, leading to two very different destinations. Okay, all preliminary stuff. Seven questions and then the application. So question number one. Who's in control? And the answer is the owner of the field. Verse 27, and the servants of the master of the house came and said to him, Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have weeds? The servants are puzzled. But the owner is not. He's in complete control. And so he says, an enemy's done this. Do you want us to go and gather them? No. Lest in gathering the weeds, you root up the wheat along with them. Let them grow together. It's all at his command, isn't it? Until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first, bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn. So it's his will that the wheat and the weeds grow together, that they coexist. They're side by side until the harvest. So the owner, he, of course, is the King. He's the Son of Man. He's the Lord Jesus Christ. And it's his will that for a time, weeds and wheat, believers and unbelievers, coexist. They live side by side. So when you see the weeds flourishing, when you see in the field of this world wickedness thriving, it doesn't mean the Lord is not in control. So question number two. How does this parable deal with the disparity in the Jewish mind between expectation, what they're expecting, and how it will actually be fulfilled? Well, of course, the Jews are expecting that when the kingdom comes, the wicked will be thrown out. They'll be punished. But no, says Jesus, wickedness will flourish right up to the end. No, lest in gathering the weeds, you root up the wheat along with them. So what Jesus is saying is, he's saying that not just that believers and unbelievers will coexist, but they will live cheek by jowl. Their roots in this world will intertwine in the closest possible associations. So husbands, wives, parents, children, friends, neighbors, citizens, living side by side with all the tensions that that means right up to the end of this present age. So Jesus is saying when the kingdom comes, and of course it's already come, life won't get any easier. That's what the Jews are expecting. When the kingdom comes, everything will be sorted. End of the wicked, punishment of the wicked. But when the kingdom comes, says Jesus, things won't get easier. Actually, it's going to be harder. They won't mean the end of being slapped on the cheek by an evil person. He'll slap you on the other cheek too. Question number three. What's the devil up to? Well, he resists the coming of the kingdom. He's the one opposing the rule of Christ. He makes trouble for the sons of the kingdom by helping and promoting his own sons. Anything to resist the coming of the king's rule. So right up to the end, the wheat will have to contend with the weeds. Weeds who will drink in the rain. Weeds who may grow and shade out the wheat, shade out the sun. Weeds who are going to put themselves first. Now, Jesus calls the unconverted the weeds. He calls them sons of the evil one in verse 38. What does he mean, sons of the evil one? He's saying that their defining characteristic, their distinguishing mark, is their likeness to God's enemy. So they may be bright and breezy, clever and cultured. They may be good neighbours and fine citizens. But the bottom line is that they refuse to bow the knee to the king. They align themselves with the enemy. They refuse to bow to the king. So the devil promotes an environment where the wicked will flourish and the righteous will suffer. He will stir up the wickedness of the wicked. And sometimes, tragedy of tragedies, we get snapshots of that, don't we? The Holocaust, the killing fields of Cambodia, the genocide of Rwanda. That's the wicked one stirring up the wickedness. We thank God for his restraining grace, because those events don't happen every day. Question number four. What will happen to the world if the weeds are only removed at harvest time? Well, wickedness will intensify. Lawlessness will increase because the weeds are growing. They're flourishing. Evil must reach a fullness, a ripeness, a maturity. It's only going to be harvested when it fully fills out its wickedness. It's only to be harvested when it's ready, and not before. Verse 41, the Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers. Now, lawbreakers is not a very good translation in the ESV. It's more than that. Same word is translated elsewhere in the ESV, so it's being inconsistent, but it's translated elsewhere as lawlessness. So 1 John chapter 3, verse 4, John says, sin is lawlessness. The Greek word anomia is where we get the word anomaly from. That's what sin is, it's the anomaly. Breaks the law, but it's lawlessness. So what's lawlessness? Well, it's not doing 30 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour limit. That's just law-breaking, isn't it? Lawlessness is doing 100 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour limit. That's lawlessness. It's not parking on a yellow line when the yellow line's in operation. That's law-breaking. It's destroying the signs and beating up the traffic wardens. That's lawlessness. Do you see? It's of a different scale altogether. In my unconverted days, I didn't just break God's law. I rejected the lawgiver himself. I said, God, who's God? He doesn't own me. He can't tell me what to do. And if I think that he's going to tell me to do this, then I will deliberately, with all the force of my being, do the opposite. That's what lawlessness is. God doesn't tell me what to do. I reject the whole idea of a lawgiver. I'm the law. I choose. I decide. I'll tell you what's good and what's not good. And so as the weeds come to harvest, so lawlessness will intensify. This poisonous crop will reach a ripeness. Lawlessness, not just law breaking, but lawlessness will be maxed out. People will defy God with their whole being. 2 Timothy, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. So don't be surprised when the wicked get their way. Don't be surprised when all that's good and just and true and noble and lovely gets trampled underfoot. Don't be surprised. Nothing's gone wrong. This is their hour. And it will soon pass. If you find yourselves ever fretting about the wickedness that you see in this world, go and drink a couple of draughts of Psalm 37. For example, just Psalm 37, verse 10. In just a little while, the wicked will be no more. Though you look carefully at his place, he will not be there. But the meek shall inherit the land and delight themselves in abundance of peace. So the wicked will flourish. Nothing's gone wrong. This is their hour. It will soon pass. So until then, I'm expecting the weeds to flourish. I'm expecting them not to listen. In this passing age, our voices, our values will not carry the day. And yet the kingdom will continue to come. Wickedness, Christian friends, is alive and kicking, and it's only going to get worse. So question number 5. What happens to the wheat? Well, the wheat too will reach a ripeness. Verse 38, the good seed, says Jesus, is the sons of the kingdom. So that's their defining characteristic. They love and serve the king. Their lives are bound up with the kingdom. Their defining quality is to grow in the likeness of the king. And they too, just as the weeds are coming to maturity, to harvest, so too the wheat goes to a maturity, to the harvest. They'll reach a fullness. The generation at the harvest will be the most Christ-like generation of all, because the wheat is ripening. And it is ripening, isn't it? Think about it. When Jesus spoke these words to his disciples, there was just a little circle of people. In the kingdom, that's all it was. It was tiny, the mustard seed. But now there are more believers in more nations than there have ever been. And just for example, our understanding of God's word has grown, hasn't it? This year is the 1700th anniversary of the Creed of Nicaea. The Creed of Nicaea spells out the deity of Christ, because in the early church there were these great battles about whether Christ is God. And so they put it together. They say, God from God, light from light, true God from true God, begotten, not created, of the same essence as the Father. There it is. It's settled. Biblical orthodoxy. Jesus is God, as well as being fully man. So people, of course, still say he's not God. But in one sense, the battle's been won. Because those who say he isn't God, they're heretics. Or maybe it was 1,500 years before Christians began to realize that the state and the kingdom of heaven were not coextensive. That's why we don't believe in a state church and laws of the state to promote Christianity. That's why we don't go on military crusades to establish the kingdom of heaven. We've come to a clearer understanding. Or it wasn't until the 16th century that there was clarity about the whole doctrine of justification, that I leave God's court with a not condemned, not guilty verdict because of what Christ has done, saved by grace through faith. So truths become amplified, grow, they mature, they enrich, we get a clearer understanding of things. Because the wheat is ripening. And it's telling you that the kingdom advances by degrees. Okay, so there's the weeds ripening. And there's the wheat ripening. Side by side, moving towards the harvest. So question number six, what might we expect just before the harvest? Well, we might expect the gospel to be proclaimed throughout the world because there'll be believers out of every nation, kindred, tribe, and tongue. We might expect the wheat to be ripe. Here it is, it's the most Christ-like generation of all. But of course, if the wheat is ripe, then the weeds also have come to a fullness, a ripeness. It will be the most wicked generation of all. It will be when evil is at its height. And since wheat and weeds are side by side, the world's hatred for God's people will be at its height. And these pictures in Revelation 16, Revelation 19, persecution will be at its height. The sense is, when you read these things, is that wherever God's people are, they will be within reach of persecuting authorities. They will be within reach of persecution. At the moment in this world, there are lots of places where it's safe for Christians to flourish and to grow. So before the end, the contrast between the sons of the kingdom and the sons of the evil one could not be greater, because they're both coming to harvest, they're both coming to their fullness. If you like, the contrast between Babylon and Zion will be at its zenith. Because the wheat and the weeds are coming to harvest. And one will be a good crop and one will be a poisonous crop. And just before the harvest, the contrast could not be greater. So question number seven. What then will happen at the harvest? Look at verse 40. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears, let him hear. Why are the lawbreakers gathered out of his kingdom? That's what it says, isn't it? They will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers, all lawlessness. They're gathered out because they don't belong. They're not the good seed that's sown by the Son of Man, by Jesus. They're the bad seed that's been sown by an enemy. So they don't belong. They hate the king, they hate his commands, they hate his people. And they will certainly hate the consummation of the kingdom, where we read the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. So they have no place in the kingdom. And it's the choice that they've made. They refuse to bow the knee to the king. We don't want this king. And so therefore they're gathered out of his kingdom. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. It speaks of rage, doesn't it? Anger, bitterness, fear. There's a sense in which their universe has contracted down to just themselves. And only themselves. Throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place they will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. A fiery furnace. On Monday I went for a stroll, walking along by the river. And I passed a burned out car. And I peered in. You could still smell the fire. Is it still a car? No. It's now a wreck. It's derelict. It's burnt out. It's destroyed. It's just a shell. In one sense, it's recognizable. You could see what it was, what it had been. But looking at that burnt-out wreck, in another sense, it's unrecognizable. See what verse 42 is saying? Human beings. What are human beings? Human beings are made in the image of God. That's what we are. Okay, even though we're fallen, you can still see in us the image of God. But human beings who continue in their rebellion against the King, against the Son of Man, the true man, who continue in their rebellion against this world's rightful ruler, that being so, they are no longer fit to bear his image. And so the image of God is stripped away, leaving only a creature. It's no longer human. It's a beast. And is fit only for the fiery furnace. We see that now, don't we? Sin deconstructs our humanity. It makes us less than human. It destroys our humanity. And so, of course, as the weeds come to harvest, sin is allowed to run its course. The total destruction of my humanity. If I don't think the King is worthy of my worship, then I am not fit to bear his image. Everlasting destruction. Throw them into the fiery furnace. What's the fire? Well, it's the undiluted anger of God. Is it real fire? Yes, it is the real fire. In this world, the fire you see is not the real fire. It's just the copy, the echo, the shadow of the real consuming fire. A creature stripped of the image of God, no longer human, stripped of all beauty, all that is good and true and noble and just and loving and relational and joy and peace and blessing, because all those things are the image of God. So God takes away all that is his, leaving only a creature, a beast, to rage impotently against the wrath of God, wrath to the uttermost. Jesus doesn't pull his punches, does he? So what are the righteous? What are the sinners? Because they're not great and good people, they're bad people who've come to the Saviour to save them from their sins. What of them? Well, then, verse 43, the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. See, having loved and served the King, they now shine with the glory of the King. And remember, when Jesus is speaking, he's not talking in London on a cloudy day. He's talking about the Middle Eastern sun, the brightness, the blaze of the sun. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. And there are echoes here of the transfiguration. Matthew 17, talking of Jesus, he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. So the righteous, God's people, they will radiate with the splendor, with the beauty of the glory of God. They will look like what they are. Sons of the kingdom, children of God, those made ready for God's new world. Which is why Jesus said, the meek shall inherit the earth. So, brothers and sisters, the harvest is profoundly shocking in so many ways when you stop and think about this. Look into the future of the human race. All the noises and politics and so on against this, they shrivel and shrink to nothing. The fuss that people make about the little, petty, tiny things. Look into the future of the human race. It's the great divide. If you don't want the King, If you refuse to bow the knee, then you will not bear the image of the Son of Man, the ultimate man. And the image of God is stripped away, and if we could see, we would recoil in horror. But if you love and serve the King, then you will be made like Him. And if we could see the righteous on that day, we would be tempted to worship them, because they would bear beautifully, truly, the image of God. As John writes, beloved, we are God's children now. We don't look like it, do we? And what will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when He appears, we shall be like Him, because we shall see Him as He is. And what is it to be like Him? And He was transfigured before them, and His face shone like the sun. This is not hyperbole. Jesus is saying this is what it will be. They will look like the children of God, because that's what they are. Perfect, beautiful, shining reflections of God's glory, shining like the sun. See, at the end of the age, in the field of this world, everyone receives their due. And there's nothing unfair about this. If you follow the evil one, then you go to the place of the evil one. If you follow the King, then you share in His glory. You inherit the kingdom. There's conspicuous punishment and conspicuous glory, but only at the end. He who has ears, let him hear. So let's draw this to a close. Three quick applications. Number one, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised to see the ungodly prosper. Don't be surprised to see wickedness going from strength to strength. The weeds will dominate. Politics, media, culture, education, our various institutions, our local life, our national life, they will dominate. They'll make no reference to the King, not interested in the King. But when they dominate, nothing's gone wrong. They're simply ripening for harvest. So don't be surprised. Number two, don't be intimidated. In the field of this world, who are the imposters? The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field, but while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So the field belongs to the King, and the field is for the wheat. The field is for the sons of the kingdom. So don't be intimidated. When you're made to feel uncomfortable and unwelcome and unwanted, and made to feel that what you have to say, you're an imposter, you're not welcome here, it's not we who are the imposters. The world doesn't belong to the weeds. The world doesn't belong to the ungodly. The weeds always oppose the wheat. In this age, the ungodly will persecute the godly. So in North Korea, a girl and her family disappeared. What was her crime? She got a good grade at school. Her teacher said, well done. She said, yes, by the grace of God. And that was it. In North Korea, the state experiments on Christians with chemical weapons and biological weapons. The kingdom of heaven is in North Korea. There are tens of thousands of believers there, but terribly persecuted. The Burmese army used Karen believers, including women and children, to clear the minefields. How? By getting them to walk across the minefields. Let's get the Christians to do that. Persecution. Believers are the most, Bible believers are the most persecuted group in the world. They're not welcome. They're a rebuke to the ungodly. They're a reminder that there is a king, this world's rightful ruler. But the weeds say the field is for us, and you're not welcome. But we're not the imposters. And one day, all sin and lawlessness will be taken out of the field, will be taken out of this world, because it doesn't belong here. And it's the meek that shall inherit the earth. And of course, it won't be this tired old earth, it'll be a resurrected earth. A new heavens, a new earth, the very home of righteousness. So don't be intimidated. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and lawbreakers and throw them into the fiery furnace. That's at the harvest. But before the harvest, the world will have a fiery furnace for God's people. Think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They refused to bow down to the image. They're the only ones. So we can expect a fiery furnace to be kindled for us. And the Lord didn't save Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from the fiery furnace. He saved them in the fiery furnace. He won't save us from persecution, but he will save us in persecution. And so in Daniel we read that Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, "Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "But I see four men, unbound, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." It was when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were faithful to the Lord that they experienced heaven on earth, and the Lord stood with them. Don't be intimidated. The Lord will stand with us. And number three, don't be compromised. Now, we live side by side with those who hate the king. They say the triumph of a dictatorship is when its citizens censor themselves. And the danger is that for a quiet life in a hostile world, we censor ourselves. We go quiet. We want to blend in. I don't want to cause any fuss. But we're sons, and that includes men and women. We're sons of the kingdom. Our loyalty is to the king. If I expect to be conspicuously different from the ungodly on judgment day, then let me be conspicuously different now. If I expect to shine like the sun on that day, then let me be the light of the world now. If I've been sown by the Son of Man, then let me produce a harvest of Christ-likeness. So don't be surprised. Don't be intimidated. And don't be compromised. And if I'm to do that, I've got to keep something in mind. Something in the front of my mind. The harvest. Why is the field here? It's for the harvest. Why has the field been sown? It's for the harvest. In the life of the field, the single greatest momentous event is the harvest. Which this morning, if you're not a Christian, that's why the devil will labor hard to make you forget the harvest. He'll always say to you two things. You see, if there's a harvest, it means there must be a beginning, there must be an end. The field must be sown and there must be a harvest. So the devil will say to you two things. He'll beat it like a drum. He'll say there's no real beginning. If there is, it's just too far away, too far back, doesn't matter. There's no real beginning and there's no real end. So don't worry. There is no harvest. Just carry on, do what you do. I wonder, have you swallowed that lie? No beginning, no end. Just as this has always been. Do you live as though no Jesus ever came into this world to save us from sin and death and hell? Do you live as though no Jesus ever went to that cross to die the punishing death that sinners deserve to die? And that no Jesus rose again from the dead, resurrection midstream in the history of the world to give us new life? Do you believe that he will not return? That there will be no harvest? But the harvest is the whole point. That's why there's a field. It's for the harvest. So the king will return. On that Bethlehem night, well, there were lots of angels, but when he returns, it will be with all his holy angels. And he will come on the clouds of heaven with power and glory, and, says the Bible, with flaming fire. And every eye will see him. I will see him. You will see him. We will be there. It will be the momentous event. It will be the climax of the age. It will be the harvest. It will be the great separation of the human race. He who has ears, let him hear. Let's pray.